Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Janice Cromer with America's Great Loop Cruisers Association's weekly blog radio show. With us this week, as usual, is Steve Cromer, who helps us out with technical issues and also does great on customer service. Before we get started, I would like to give a special thanks to our Admiral sponsors, Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guides and Magazine, and Skipper Bob Publications. I'm really happy that all of our Admiral sponsors will be represented at our fall rendezvous in just about a month, so I hope you're all coming. America's Great Loop Cruisers Association, or AGLCA as we call ourselves, is an organization of people who share that sense of adventure and camaraderie that is America's Great Loop. For those not familiar with the Great Loop, it's the continuous waterway that circles the eastern portion of North America. Our association was formed primarily to gather information and tell you all about this awesome journey. For those wishing to learn more about the Great Loop, please visit our website at www.greatloop.org. Non-members can join the association at that site, or anyone can sign up for one of our new one-day seminars. They are planned to basically give you all of the information you need about the cruising lifestyle that is the Great Loop. Our guest host this week is well-known forum poster, Kitty Nicolai. Kitty has been a vital member of the Coast Guard Auxiliary for many years, and she patrolled the Loop's inland rivers for more than 6 years. Kitty joined the organization in October of 2007, so she's been a long-term member. Kitty is uniquely qualified to guide us through the Illinois and Upper Mississippi rivers. Welcome, Kitty. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for asking me, Janice. I was reading some of the posts on the forum and some blogs, and that prompted me to make an initial post to the forum about some of the western rivers, inland rivers. It seems a lot of people, the blue water sailors, are really surprised by what they end up seeing on the rivers and experiencing.
Yes, it's very different. When I read Kitty's post, I thought it was one of the clearest, most helpful explanations we had had on the inland rivers, and that's what prompted me to invite Kitty to be on the show. Kitty, let's start with aids to navigation. Tell us about them and if they're different.
Well, as I said, I guess somewhere on the post, the initial post is the Western rivers have their own marking system, the Western rivers marking system. It's similar to what we're all used to, and red, right, returning from the sea or returning from the Gulf. But there are other little idiosyncrasies involved in the markers. One thing, if you're returning from the sea, you're going to have reds on the right, but we also refer to banks in the river, left descending banks and right descending banks, and sometimes we need that information when we're navigating to speak with tows or to find out where something's located on the river, on which side of the river. So the left descending bank, LDB, is the bank that's on your left when you are going downriver descending, and of course the right is on your right side when you're descending and going downriver. If we think about it, then the reds are on the left descending bank when you're going downriver. Yeah, there's another couple of interesting things on the Western River, these crossing marks and passing marks. It's harder to explain than to actually do, but if you went out and looked it up, you would find how to do that. Basically, the passing marks you pass, and they look like a regular triangle or a square. And the crossing marks tell you, the mariner, that you need to cross the river to stay in the channel. If you go to USCG Boating, that's one word, www.uscgboating.org, the Aids to Navigation, call them ATONS, A-T-O-N-S, Aids to Navigation System, or Aids to Navigation or AIDS. There's a document on there with an illustration that shows passing and crossing marks. A passing mark and a crossing mark could be together on one stanchion up on the bank or up on the shore. And let's say you're going down a bank, you're proceeding down a bank. You would come with the bank, let's say, as the red side, and you may have green buoys in the middle of the river, so you wouldn't have, your red side would actually be the bank. Your left descending bank. If you came across up on shore a passing mark, you would go past it. You would look over your left shoulder, and you would see what's on the other side of that passing mark. If it's another passing mark, you would just continue down the bank. If it's a crossing mark, which are a series of red or green diamonds, depending on green and white and red and white diamonds, depending on the side of the river. If you go to the other side of the passing mark, look over your red left shoulder in this case, and you see a crossing mark, a red one, you would have to look somewhere over on the other side of the river and find a green matching crossing mark. And that marks your channel. The channel crosses the river there between the red and the green crossing marks. It no longer goes down alongside the bank.
That's it's fairly important.
I'm sorry?
I had never heard that before, Kitty.
It's an easy way to run out of channel.
Yeah, I can imagine. That is
there
really
helpful.
There aren't a lot. Is that illustrated anywhere on the website that you mentioned?
Say that first part again, Janice. Sorry.
Is it illustrated on the website, the Coast Guard website?
Yes, it is. There's an illustration, I don't have the page number, but there's an illustration in there that's all about the different aids to navigation, not only the Western rivers, but there's a nice little illustration in there that shows a Western river markage.
That will be helpful. Thank you. Now let's go on to tows and barges. It's interesting from your notes that Kitty was nice enough to forward me. We should call them tows and not tugs, correct, to be technically correct?
Correct. The river people may speak their own language for sure, but tugs are thought of as those little fleeters, those little pushers and helpers that you might find in fleeting areas. Along the rivers, Western rivers, these large vessels are called tows, and they're really defined as self-propelled vessels that push barges. They, even though they're called tows, they don't pull barges here, they push them, and they're the self-propelled vessels, and they're pushing barges which are the non-self-propelled vessels that are loaded with cargo. You know, so many people say, oh, there goes a barge, and they really mean a tow or a towboat. The entire integrated unit of a tow and all her barges is called a tow, but even a towboat by itself is just roughly referred to as a tow. But that can mean towboat. The little fleeters and pushers and tugs are a different type of boat, and they don't have the power and they don't have the size, for one thing. But again, to differentiate between the tows and the barges, the tow is self-propelled and the barge is a non-self-propelled vessel that holds cargo.
Now, what can we expect as far as size of the toes? We've heard some horror stories about very, very large toes pushing very, very many barges at one time.
Yes, the toes are restricted to 15 barges up above the lock system, which is basically above St. Louis, the last lock being Chain of Rocks or number 27. If they let them let toes try to, first of all, the river is a little more narrow, the mm-hmm. more upriver you get, but if they let them hook up with 42, 45 barges, they'd have to keep breaking them down and getting them through the locks.
The locking system. That makes sense.
So once they get below St. Louis, there's a fleeting area right below the Gateway Arch, basically, and below the St. Louis bridges, and they can start building size up pretty well. And the lower you get on the Mississippi, the bigger the integrated toe you'll find. 42 is common enough. So.
Is that 42? Is there a restriction on just how big they can get?
A limit to the? Did you say a limit to the size?
Yeah. Is 42 the limit to one toe that one toe can push?
I'm not sure if there's an upper limit. I used to think there was an upper limit of 42, but I think there might even be a greater size on the as you get down
really?
In the lower Mississippi River.
Uh-huh.
And speaking of that, a little bit, federally, the Mississippi as a whole is broken up into two rivers, the upper Mississippi from the Ohio confluence up and the lower Mississippi from the Ohio confluence down. So federally, they're
different rivers.
They're different rivers.
Wow. Is there anything, I don't know how to put my question, is there anything very physically different from the two rivers that you would know you were going down to the lower at that point?
Well, you wouldn't know it at that point. Everything was remained the same there.
Okay.
And, of course, the lower Mississippi is not the best way to take for a looper. There are essentially no services for recreational vessels. Then you have all that commercial traffic. It's actually longer to go via the Mississippi, the lower Mississippi, instead of the 10 times. So it's not something we would do or we would want to do, though I've heard people do it. It wouldn't be for me, but
people take the 10-tom as an alternative.
I'm sorry?
People would take the 10-tom waterway as an alternative to the lower Mississippi?
Yeah, I say that once again, will you, Janice? I'm sorry.
That's okay. You would suggest people take the 10-tom waterway as an alternative to the lower Mississippi?
Oh, yes, because actually you may think it's a shorter way to the Gulf, but it's a longer way,
uh-huh.
and it's the services that kill you. The services are made for those commercial tows. They're not made for...
Really?
For the recreational boater.
Uh-huh.
So they'd be... I think the average looper would be disappointed if they take the Mississippi down.
Okay, that's good advice. Thank you. I think this is a good place to stop for a commercial, Kitty, if you don't mind. We have a commercial from our commander sponsor, Green Turtle Bay Resort.
Green Turtle Bay Marina and Resort has consistently been voted a must-stop by loopers. It has earned the coveted 5-anchor designation from Quimby's Cruising Guide. This full-service marina features over 450 slips. They are located at mile marker 31.5 on the scenic Cumberland River. Green Turtle Bay is a proud commander sponsor of AGLCA, so join them and find your waterway of life.
Thank you, Beth. Kitty, I'm looking at your outline, and we're halfway through our allotted time, and there's just so much, and you're giving us such fantastic information. If it's okay with you, I'd like you to take as much time as you need for the islands and the wind dikes and the dams. And, again, I'll be in touch with you, but my preference would be to schedule another show, half hour, to go through the brief tour that you outlined for us, because, again, it's just so fantastic. Do you think that's something we could handle?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that, Janice, but I know that we have a lot of loopers right now that are starting the river system, so I was trying to keep a little bit ahead of them with this information, but whatever you would like to do and whatever whatever time slot you have available, I'd be willing to continue.
Why don't we see if we can do something next week, and I'll be in touch offline when we finish today's show.
Okay.
Great. Then why don't we start with I'm having a hard time picturing these islands in the middle of the rivers. How many are there? I mean, it's something very common.
It's fairly common. You could actually look on Google Earth and take a little tour down the river, and you'll find islands, all over the Mississippi, upper and lower Mississippi. In the Alton Pool, which is the pool defined by the Mel Price Lock, above the Mel Price Lock, around mile 200, there are a number of islands in that pool, and they're all, not all, but many of them are used for recreational boaters. They have nice beaches, and dozens of boats beach on island beaches and party all weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
Again, I have a hard time picturing that, although I shouldn't. We live on a barrier island, and there's basically a sandbar that grew up right across from us, and we see people all the time on the weekend beached over there, so it is fun. Tell us something about the waters themselves. Are they calm? Are they big currents?
About what, Janice? I didn't get the topic again.
Tell us a little bit about the currents that we can expect.
Did you say the current?
Current. C-U-R-R-E-N-T.
Okay. Well, the current to me is not that bad. During flood season, things will pick up. The current never bothered me on the Mississippi, but in spring when we start getting a lot of flood waters, the snows melt up north, et cetera, you start getting a lot of debris in the water that you have to dodge, and I think that's the worst thing. The current average is probably 4 or 5 miles per hour. I've seen people claim 7 or 8 miles per hour. That might be in flood stage. If there are actually boat ramps in a few places along the Mississippi where you launch into the current, so that the current certainly becomes more of an issue there. You kind of have to crab onto your trailer. So I don't consider the current that bad, but the current and the river ends up being channelized by these wing dikes. They're sometimes called wing dams or rock dikes by different people.
And getting back to the islands, they're basically caused by, you're talking about, and I'm not sure how to pronounce it, S-L-O-U-G-H-S?
Oh, sloughs?
Sloughs.
Yes, it doesn't look like.
They're built up because of the sand in the river.
Say that again, please.
Are they built up basically because of silting?
Well, the sloughs end up behind these islands. There's a huge slough just above Grafton that our normal loopers won't end up necessarily seeing or going to. if they went down to the confluence of the Illinois and Upper Mississippi River, the Looper, and they made a U-turn and started going back up north, they come to the Dardenne Slough. Once they get into Mississippi River Channel going north, if they went right, it's the channel. That goes to the right of a number of islands for a couple of miles. On the other side of those islands is the Dardenne Slough. That Dardenne Slough actually is fairly deep, and it's the it's a slough that has a lot of marinas on it with restaurants and some of the major marinas, and that's where everyone ends up having slips for their boats on, back in that slough. So some of the sloughs are navigable. But they still may have wing dikes in them, so that it does take a modicum of local knowledge to navigate some of those sloughs. Some of them aren't really navigable. They're just like a backwater behind. And,
on the island, yeah.
You know,
again,
if you wanna...
not ever having been in... Well, actually, we did. We were on the Mississippi River on a river cruise. But again, it was taking it from a different perspective then. We weren't even involved in boating ourselves. It just seems like there's a lot to learn. Tell us more about the wind dikes and wind dams. I think some of us know about them. Hoppies has been in our forum a number of times because of the problems with the, I think from the Corps of Engineers. Tell us about the wind dikes and dams.
Okay, the Corps of Engineers builds these hazards to navigation, you might say.
Uh-huh.
Like the Corps building hazards to navigation, but if you know what's going on, of course they're not. They jut out from islands or from the main banks or shores at a 90 degree angle or perhaps slightly downriver, and they're just piles of rocks, shall we say, laid in a line, and they come off the shores like wings. And they're made to channelize the river naturally. So when the current takes the waters downriver, it's forced to the channel between wing dikes that are on both sides of the river, or between an island and a bank. It's the waters are forced down the middle, and that keeps the channel scrubbed out, shall we say, and channelized. And that reduces the need for active dredging so much from dredges.
Uh-huh.
So some of these wing dikes, they're all, well, I want to say they're charted on the river charts, but I also say that, of course, the river charts aren't updated that often. And so what the Corps of Engineers likes to do every year is go in there and add a few wing dikes that never get charted till the next chart update 5 years later. So what I tell people is if they see that there's a wing dike on the charts, then it is probably there. But if they don't see a wing dike on the charts, it still may be there. You just may not know it. Now,
is it
depending on
physically marked so that you can see it with your just with your eye, or?
Well, it depends on the river stage of whether you can see it. Some of the wing dikes, you depending on stage again, end up above the water and you can see them very well.
Uh-huh.
Some of them, the treacherous ones, end up just below the water. Now,
sure.
If you can read the water and see the little eddies and things, you can tell where some of those are.
Uh-huh. But
people run around.
There's not like a buoy or anything that they have there so that you can actually avoid it.
It's not a problem. Wing dikes aren't a problem because they're not in the channel.
Okay.
So you keep her between the buoys and you'll be okay.
And you'll be okay. Okay, I was missing that point. Yeah, that's pretty obvious.
Stay
in the channel. Always stay in the channel.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't think we're going to start the brief tour because we won't have enough time to really do much about it. Do you mind telling me a little bit about your involvement with the Coast Guard? That really fascinates me.
Yes, I'm actually former Navy from years ago.
Really?
I saw an opportunity to serve again. The Coast Guard Auxiliary is a volunteer organization. We're a uniformed volunteer organization. We're the Coast Guard is comprised of active duty, reserves, auxiliarists, and civilians. I think now there are somewhere around 88,000 people altogether, maybe a little more. And the auxiliary is a uniformed volunteer organization. We don't get paid. We wear the uniforms of the Coast Guard, except they wear gold on their shoulder boards, let's say, and we wear silver. We're similar, you might say, to the Civil Air Patrol, which is administered by the Air Force, and we are administered by the Coast Guard. We have our own boats. We buy our own boats, and we rig them with extra gear for search and rescue and other missions, and it's all with our own dollar. And the Coast Guard does, when we go out on patrols, the Coast Guard does pay us for, reimburse us for fuel and oil and a small maintenance allowance. The Coast Guard Auxiliary, by law, is allowed to perform nearly every mission of the active duty and reserve Coast Guard except direct law enforcement. We have no power to arrest, and they won't let us carry guns. So... otherwise, we work side by side with the active duty, or we're out on patrol with them, or we're out on patrol in our own boats.
But you actually have your own funding, then. It's not actually coming from the Coast Guard itself.
What isn't coming from the Coast Guard?
Funding.
Funding?
Money?
Yes, it is. There's a lot of funding, believe me, that the Coast Guard has to do for the Coast Guard Auxiliary, yes.
Uh-huh, okay.
But we buy our own, these are all our own vessels that we buy. My vessel, the one I use for the part of the loop that I did, I purchased to be a Coast Guard Auxiliary patrol boat and rigged it as such. We have Coast Guard Auxiliary signs and other gear aboard.
You purchase your own vessels, the Coast Guard Auxiliary purchases them, or you personally purchase them?
I say that once again, Janice, sorry.
Does the Coast Guard Auxiliary help you money-wise with purchasing your boats, or is that something you have to do on your own?
Oh, not at all. They don't help with that purchase. They don't help with capital expenditures like that. Occasionally, they'll give us a life jacket, a PFD, or some other rescue gear, training, furnished training. But all the big capital expenditures are all up to the individual Coast Guard auxiliarist.
I am amazed. I had no idea. That is really huge commitment then for the people, the auxiliary members.
Yes, and a lot of time. A lot of members, well, some members, don't contribute too much. Other members look at it almost like a full-time job that they don't get paid for.
Yeah. Well, I could go on for an hour on questions about the Coast Guard Auxiliary. I wasn't aware of that. Just one quick question. Can you rescue people, or legally, are you allowed to rescue people if need be, or do you need to be in the Coast Guard?
That's absolutely one of the reasons we're out there, is to rescue. We can do, like I said, every mission authorized by the active duty Coast Guard, we're able to do as well, except direct law enforcement. But we'll work right alongside the active duty and reserve inspecting vessels, marine safety missions, pollution missions. We were deployed to Katrina. We were deployed to Deepwater Horizon, the Gulf oil spill. And in the Midwest, they're deployed with the active duty to some of the flooding that seems to occur every spring up in the Midwest. So,
how much training is required before you can actually participate in the auxiliary?
Well, there are a lot of missions in the auxiliary. It's not just boating. We have education, and as I said, we have marine safety and pollution and public affairs. So there are a lot of missions you can do. Of course, if you have that experience, we like to tap into it. I did operations. I was an operations specialist in the Navy, and so I'm back into operations, you might say, with patrols and other missions, operational missions like that. But the Coast Guard Auxiliary has a lot of training, so if you're motivated, we'll train you. And just because you were a boater doesn't mean you're trained in the way the Coast Guard or Coast Guard Auxiliary likes you to be trained. So
sure.
You know, be reasonable, do it our way as well.
Okay, well, I think we need to stop for today, but this has been really fascinating for me. I'm sure our members will love listening to it too, Kitty. Thank you, really. I really do appreciate it. And I'll be in touch offline to see if we can schedule a follow-up as soon as possible.
Great. Thank you so much, Janice.
Thank you. Everyone, safe cruising this week, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.